Welcome to this session of the Beyond the Veil Summit, where we'll explore the nature of the veil between the worlds. I'm Lisa Bunnies, your host, and my guest for this session is Dr. Mark Pitstick. Our topic today is visit with your departed loved ones now. Dr. Mark Pitstick is an author, lecturer, counselor, and holistic physician. He directs the Soul Phone Foundation, and he's also a research assistant for the Soul Phone Project and founder of the Greater Reality Living Groups. Mark, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you. Welcome.
My pleasure, Lisa. Looking forward to it.
Oh, huh. Not as much as I am, because your work is truly groundbreaking. I know that you say that scientific research has now definitively demonstrated that life continues after bodily death. Do tell.
Yeah. And first of all, for your viewers, we're going to be talking about facilitated ADC, after-death communications. And the point about the scientific research is that it now makes these various techniques and even the discussion about afterlife and our dear ones much more real because we have this scientific evidence. So, you know, 2020, when that year popped in, I thought, wow, how perfect, you know, a year to see things clearly and perfectly. And of course, it was a challenging year for many of us. But the great news is we did put together then, assemble all the research that had been done for the previous few years and determined that we could say, as you said perfectly, that life after death has been definitively demonstrated scientifically based on 7 different experiments, over 1 trillion pieces of data points, multiple sessions, replicated, controlled, double blind. I mean, all the things you need for real scientific research. Dr. Schwartz has had 3 papers published in scientific journals describing this work, and the 4th comprehensive one is pending. So that's, yes, the great news. We want to shout from the rooftops that it's been demonstrated. Now, we're holding off on the P word, the prove word, proof, until we have the multicenter studies. Those will occur later this year with at least 6 other universities and institutes who also replicate the research, probably using much more advanced technology. And then Dr. Schwartz considers that he will be able to, because I mean, he's a serious scientist, former Harvard assistant professor, tenured professor at Yale, and 30 years senior professor at University of Arizona. However, all that over 600 scientific papers, I mean, this guy's a giant. Even so, he says he'll be able to accurately and responsibly say then that life after death has been scientifically proven.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So that's Dr. Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona, Tucson. I just wanted to make that clear. Yes. Yeah. So let's go ahead and dive in. I know that you prefer the term a post-material person as opposed to somebody who's deceased, or explain that terminology.
Yeah, I'm going to be talking about Dr. Schwartz a lot because we're like soul brothers. We've been working on this so hard and so long. And, you know, as I have a sip of tea, it reminds me that we spent many hours in his office having a cup of tea and discussing these very questions, because we realized at one point he said spontaneously, we don't want to continue using words that will further give fuel to erroneous understandings. And so any archaic words, any words that are strongly anchored, for example, death and die, when you hear that, you think, you know, the end, things like that. And also then, so spirit, well, my main association with that is Casper the Friendly Ghost, you know, watching those cartoons when I was a kid. So sure, they're flying around, they're white, they're kind of wispy. And it turns out, based on everything we know from all the collective evidence, that those who have passed on, those who have dropped their body, as they say in India, those who have changed worlds, Native American phrase, have everything about them still continues except this earthly shell. Now, we humans are so focused on the human body, we identify so much that this is who we are, but in fact, it turns out that it's much less than 1% of what we are. So the rest, the personality, the intelligence, the memory, the sense of humor, the preferences, our light, our energy, our info energy systems, all that continues on. In addition, it's become clear that those who have changed worlds are or can be just as physical as we. At one point, one of the researchers asked, so, you know, the question everybody's been wondering, after you die, can you still have sex? And the answer was yes, and in ways many, many times better than while you're on Earth. So we're all like, yes. So they can be just as physical as we. So it just depends on who's observing, what their intention is at the time. Do they want to be pure light and energy, or do they want to appear, for example, a loved one just passed on during an NDE, so they can appear as grandma to reassure and comfort the one who is just passed, but certainly she doesn't want to look like an old grandma for eternity. So post-material person then honors a centuries-old philosophical debate between materialists who believe that the only thing that really exists is what you can sense with your five senses, and post-materialists who say, no, there is more. Dr. Schwartz founded the Academy for Advances in Post-Materialist Science, and there are over 350 university professors, physicians, and scientists, all for whom their working theory or the working assumption is that consciousness is primary, not just a temporary byproduct of the human brain. So we went with this post-material person for all those reasons. Yeah, and we hope, by the way, that term will be absorbed into the common lexicon, just as near-death experiences, after-death communications, and other afterlife related terms have.
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense to use that terminology. It takes away the scary edge to it and makes it a lot more matter of fact. So yeah, thank you for that. That's very helpful. Now, let's get back to this really great news about, you know, that this research has come so far. Let's talk about how this can actually affect the way that we're living our lives.
Well, in the past, you know, I went to theology school before as a psychologist, before as a doctor of chiropractic. And so in the past, we pretty much had to go by faith. I took a year and a half of biblical history. And at the end, the professor said, so now you can see in conclusion that all of our beliefs about God and, you know, Jesus and afterlife, life after death and so on, largely have to be taken on faith. There's very little real evidence. And I was like, damn, you know, why didn't you tell us that the first day? I could save myself a lot of tuition money. So the other thing is that over the years, I've been working with people now for 49 years. I started when I was 19, working in hospitals. So I've been around a lot of people who are dying as they die, and with loved ones who have had a loved one just pass. And a lot of them are afraid, even ones that go to church three times a week and, you know, been going to church forever. I mean, when the rubber hits the road, they're like, okay, you know, is this getting kind of real here? Is there really evidence? Is there really an afterlife? So I think that's the biggest way, Lisa, is that having all the collective evidence, and that means this scientific research we're talking about, but also the clinical research, NDEs, after-death communications, et cetera. By the way, I talk about all this on my website, soulproof.com. There are 93 articles that cover all these things, free radio shows where I have interviews with the best of the best, Wayne Dyer, Brian Weiss, Michael Newton, Raymond Moody, et cetera, so people can learn all this information. But now that we have all this evidence, especially the scientific evidence, we can relax. We can enjoy the ride, the journey. There's not that, you know, what if I don't see my loved ones again? Or what if there really is nothing? And that's the biggest thing. I think we can really fully live when we know that we're not this body, but the rest of us eternal.
Right. Well, you know, you mentioned the phrase after death communication. Is this something that commonly happens? Because it feels like a lot of people would love to have this happen to them, but they don't know how.
Yeah. ADCs for short, after death communications, probably first came on the scene with the book by the Guggenheims, Hello from Heaven, where they have 350 cases. And I know that's where I learned a lot about it. I mentioned Dr. Raymond Moody. He estimates that 25 to 33%, depending on the polls, of Americans have had some sort of meaningful perception of their, quote, deceased loved ones. That number swells to 66% for widows and widowers with their spouse who has passed, and 75% of parents. However, I'm a part of the organization Helping Parents Heal, .org for bereaved parents. And I've worked with thousands of parents. And when I do informal surveys, I see a show of hands, almost all of them say, yes, they've had some sort of perception with their child who's changed worlds. Now, these ADCs, Lisa, can be while awake and involve our usual senses. Sometimes they'll hear, see, feel loved ones, just like we would with other people on Earth. Sometimes they involve more ethereal senses, seeing in their mind's eye, hearing telepathically, having a feeling or knowing they're in the room. ADCs can also occur while asleep. And these seem like vivid dreams. Many people have them. Gosh, I woke up and thought I was with my mother who passed, and it seems so real. And I feel this peace now. I just have a greater knowing and a peace that she is fine. So those are some of the signs of a valid dream ADC. But in addition, we have a number of what are called evidential dream ADCs, in which a person dreamed, for example, the eminent psychiatrist Carl Jung had a dream where his next door neighbor who had just passed was standing at the foot of his bed. They were talking, and Jung, with his wonderful psychoanalytic mind, said, how will I know tomorrow if this is just a dream or it really happened? And so he asked his friend to give him some sort of sign. Well, his friend said, well, tomorrow, go over to my house, ask my wife to let you in my library, and on this shelf, in this row, there is a book of this color by this name. And the next day, Jung did as instructed. He'd only been in the library a few times. He certainly didn't know, every book by heart. And just as instructed, there was this book, and the title of the book was Legacy of the Dead. So sometimes in these ADCs, information is shared that was not known, that could not be known. Things like unknown life insurance policy, and the papers are found afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you for adding the idea of dreams, because I think some people feel like if you're sleeping, it's not the same as getting messages while you're conscious. So I appreciate your adding that dimension to it. But I'm also wondering then, many people are afraid of what they consider consorting with spirits because the religion of their upbringing tells them that this is evil or wrong or whatever wording you choose to use. So could you talk about that a bit?
Sure. First of all, most religions and most denominations actually encourage afterlife communication. In Buddhism and Hinduism, both, by the way, there's a well-established set of bardos practices where after a person drops their body, their loved ones and priests are with them, praying with them, helping them on to the different levels. But yeah, some of the more fundamentalist and vociferous denominations in Christianity, have people scared to death. Oh, imagine that, using fear for control. And especially they're distorting what I call the thou shalt not chapter of Leviticus, which was in the Old Testament. Now, that that advice, do not consort with the dead, was given for good reason. In other words, it shouldn't be taken lightly in a cavalier way, especially for people who are imbalanced. In other words, if someone was mentally imbalanced, then just doing that could be enough to set them off. So I encourage people to pray beforehand, shield themselves, set an intention. But, you know, all this has to be taken in the context. So, if, for example, in Leviticus, it says, thou shalt not wear clothing made of two different types of material. Thou shalt not cut thy hair a certain way, which I'm pretty sure I broke. For women, they said that women who go into the temple while they're on their period should be punished by death. And so I say to people, okay, you know, that's from like 1000 BC. How much of what we do and believe today is based on something back then? And if we're going to take seriously that advice to not consort with spirits, are we also going to, you know, follow those other very archaic, perhaps at the time for good reason, rules?
So I'm wondering then, because your work is so solidly based in science, which I really appreciate, I think it's really interesting that somebody who's so strongly based in science says that you should make sure that you pray first and shield yourself first. How do you reconcile those seemingly opposing viewpoints?
Well, they're not opposing at all. I don't know if I should even share this, but I'll go ahead. The first book that Dr. Schwartz and I wrote is called Greater Reality Living. And that talks about the research with post-material persons and how that then can affect the way we live and treat each other now. Well, volume two of Greater Reality Living series will be talking about the communication technology that will develop next with the angelic kingdom, angels, guides, master teachers, more evolved assistants. And then the third, with source itself, one mind, the light, wherever you want to call it. So it's not at all unscientific to consider some of these notions. Yes, as we, for example, Thomas Jefferson said, the truth is embedded in the Bible like diamonds in a dung heap, which I just, oh my God, what a great phrase. And I agree. Well, the same way with some of the various beliefs, you know, the importance of prayer or shielding yourself and so on. Some of the new age, new thought advice, you know, maybe doesn't make so much sense, but some of it has really good roots. And that's why it's not really new. It's just being rediscovered. So we're going to look at all that with the research, and there are many others also doing that. So it's a very exciting time to be on planet Earth.
It absolutely is. But I wonder, do you think people are really ready to handle all of this?
I think many people are. We call them the 15 percenters, and this is based on the work by Michael Newton, PhD, author of Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls, founder of Life Between Lives Therapy. Genius man, wonderful man. He was my radio show guest when I had the show Soulutions. Well, he and his team have worked with, I think it's now like 40,000 different clients from around the world, independently, 28 different languages. And so these people have mapped out for us then, what is the afterlife like? Just kind of like we understand what it's like on Earth. And he says that based on all this, and he's passed now, that about 12% of people on Earth are what he calls intermediate souls. 2 to 3% are more advanced souls. Some people call them old souls, but it really doesn't have to do with chronological age. It has to do with advancement, evolution. And then the rest are beginner souls. And so, you know, it's not kind of hard. It's not hard to spot who's who when you look at people with these eyes. So we say, okay, let's just focus on the intermediate and advanced souls. They're open, they're more evolved, they're ready, even if they're shut down or spiritually asleep. And those are the people who are going to be ready for this. And then the others will, you know, kind of like the 100th monkey phenomena, the others will get a sense of this and it will feel right. They'll see all the changes. So yeah, we're at a very exciting time where we can have faith and knowledge combined, very powerful together.
Yeah, right. Thank you for clearing that one up. Now I'm wondering then, for those of us who are interested in this type of work, what are some of the keys to perceiving, you know, seeing, hearing, feeling, and even knowing that our post-material loved ones are nearby?
Yeah, great question. The, you know, we talked about the ADCs, after-death communications, and historically those have been spontaneous. When people have them, they are often considered a spiritually transformative experience, STE. I mean, people revere them the rest of their lives. It's kind of like the moment with Demi Moore in the movie Ghost, when she saw the penny floating and she went from just frustration and fear to, oh my God, this is really real. It's one of those, oh my God moments. Well, so now with technology, and I consider there to be three ways currently, and then the fourth huge one is on its way, to facilitate those kind of ADCs, to increase the chances of having to stack the deck. So the first, and actually how I developed the facilitated ADC technique, is with mirror gazing from Dr. Raymond Moody. And I mentioned him again, he's just such a giant in the field, such a wonderful man. I spent a week with him outside Las Vegas, Nevada. And his PhD is in Greek history. And so he knew that in the Temple of Delphos, where they had the legend on top, know thyself, they had mirror gazing. They call it the psychomantium. And it was a whole ritual where you go in an underground cave and it had especially designed circumstances where people were looking at clear olive oil in a vat. And with everything just right, often then were able to see their, quote, departed loved ones. So he designed this mirror gazing technique, which people can search and learn more about, and different therapists are using around the world. So there's mirror gazing. Then Alan Bodkin, PSYD, and Craig Hogan, PhD, wrote the book Induced ADCs, where they use rapid eye movement, desensitization. It requires a psychotherapist. But using this technique, many people have also had very meaningful perceptions of their loved ones who have passed. And then the third, what we're talking about today, and what you can explain more, your attendees can experience this FADC session, which really increases the chances of having them. And then the fourth, which is emerging, and hopefully next year, be able to have then the initial soul phone devices. The first will be a service, not a device, the soul keyboard, where people will be able to access centers and text and type with their loved ones. But to your question, yes, there are a number of things. We're kind of getting this down to a science now. A number of things that people can do to have more experiences. And I think we advertised 9 keys, but it turns out here's 11. I'll just share quickly. So first of all, to know that this is a very safe technique. It's been used with thousands and thousands of people. It's easy. Almost everybody, I should say 85%, have a meaningful experience the first time through, and it's not kooky. We already talked about definitive scientific demonstrations. The next thing that people can do is to follow the pre-technique recommendations, and we don't have time to go into that, but on my website, it's soulproof.com, it's article number 9 that talks about the things you want to do beforehand. In other words, be calm, be rested so you don't fall asleep, because this involves very deep relaxation, really clinical hypnosis. You won't be cranked up on sugar or caffeine or nicotine, because you won't be able to calm your mind enough to perceive a loved one, even though they're standing right beside you. So follow those recommendations. Say a prayer, set intentions beforehand, for assistance and also for sheltering, so you don't have to worry. And let's do a side note on those. That's probably why Leviticus warned against this, because just as there, we call them imbalanced PMPs, imbalanced post-material persons, just as on earth, there are imbalanced mentally ill people like that. Same way in the afterlife, you know, dying isn't an instant panacea or instant open door to enlightenment. And so, yeah, it's wise to shield ourselves and protect against that. The next is to know that when you're experiencing a loved one, whether through this technique or spontaneously, they may come in differently than what we're used to in earthly perception. So, for example, there you may see them in a more ethereal or gauzy form. The input may come in a flash of a second, like a download, and it'll play out, or it may unfold in chronological time. So the bottom line is to, when you have an experience like this, just notice what floats in, pops up. Those are the key words. Leave the brain out of it. Dr. Eben Alexander and I had dinner, and we discussed that both from his viewpoint as a neurosurgeon and mine as a doctor of chiropractic, we agreed that fully 95% of what the brain does, and that's such a huge number, is to inhibit sensory input. That is, the radio shows from China and, you know, cell phone tower radio frequencies and so on, are all that, the air is full of them. If we could see, hear, and feel everything that exists, we wouldn't be able to function. When we go crazy, and that's some of, in India, they call it God intoxicants, people whose filter opens too quickly to handle it. So there is a good reason why the brain filters out a lot of that, so we can just focus on functioning. However, when it comes to perceiving loved ones, it's good to quiet the brain, put it on the shelf for a little while so it's not overanalyzing everything, and then better perceive what is very real and what's usually right around us. The next thing to know is that a loved one who has recently passed, especially after a severe illness, suicide, etc., may not be able to set up a visit for a while, and spirit time and earth time are a little bit different. So if a person's very debilitated, you know, is so agitated, mentally ill, so on, that killed their body, they didn't kill themselves, but they killed their body, they may need some time of rest, recharging, counseling, and so on, before they have the wherewithal, the ability to affect that energetic communication. Same way with someone who's very old and was very sick. Next, know that when having experiences like this, know that your answers may not be, your questions may not be answered. You know, people say, well, my questions be answered. Well, probably not. It may not be your time to know. Getting that information might negate important lessons that you as a soul set up. And you may not even understand the answers that they gave them to you. So just be open to what comes in, and don't prejudge about that. It's helpful to hold a physical object of the loved one. If you have that, something that's meaningful to them, those objects can contain energy. It's most important to get on the same wavelength. And so I use a radio analogy. Now, if you wanted to listen to your favorite music on FM 105, but you're on station AM 98, you're not going to hear that music. Well, those in, quote, spirit world are, for the most part, in a realm characterized by higher energy emotions. Using David Hawkins' scale, power versus force. So things like love, gratitude, peace, joy, enthusiasm, enlightenment, those are the highest energy emotions and ways of being. Well, if a person on earth is stuck in pain, sadness, anger, resentment, bitterness, et cetera, then they're going to be missing each other, even the loved ones right in front of you yelling. So I work with this a lot with the bereaved parents, as I mentioned, and One physician, father perhaps said it best, his son was a major league baseball player and died of an undiagnosed heart disease. Just, you know, went to bed, you know, seeing the morning sun, and next morning found him in his bed. Just shocking. And I said, Evan, do you ever find yourself getting sad or, you know, resentful? Why didn't no one catch that? And so on. He said, never. He said, because that would hurt my connection with my son. That would impair my awareness of his real existence and our continuing but different relationship. I was like, wow, you know, that is so strong. What Native Americans call strong as a bear. Next, some practical things like set a time, set a date and a time ahead. In other words, don't assume that they will be with you, you know, if you call upon them in the moment. They have lives too. Next to last, talk with them as though they are right beside you, because they most likely are. And then finally, stay alert in the hours and days after the session, because not all of the contacts will come in or the information during the actual session. It may pop in later. You have some insight or some memory or a vivid dream at night. So I encourage people to journal for at least a few days, and then you're going to have the full impact of that technique.
So it sounds like you're saying that we can continue meaningful relationships with the people and maybe our pets who were or are so precious to us.
Sure can. And, you know, the saying, seeing is believing. Well, sometimes the reverse as well. Believing is seeing. So once you know that's possible, it enhances the chance it's going to. So there's a large percentage of our population who are what I call sensitives. Sometimes they're empathic as well, but sensitives mean being able to see, hear, feel, and know. So the four clairs. Oftentimes those are women, but some men. And so just knowing, well, gosh, there are quite a few humans who can perceive loved ones who have changed worlds. So I can do this too, maybe not at the level where I can, you know, make a living as a medium, but have a continuing relationship with my dog, cat, parents, whoever. And using the information from this interview today and practicing it. In other words, it is a different relationship. It's just like when you meet someone new, you know, you have to establish some things and get to know them. Well, with a post-material loved one, you knew each other before on Earth, but now it's a different day. It's a different game type of interaction. So you have to kind of play with that. And then the next thing you know, you have that meaningful relationship until you pass on and can be together more immediately.
Right. Well, so what about people who are either afraid that it won't work or they don't believe that it will work? Do you need to believe for this to work?
No, that's one of the most fun parts of my job. As I say, I've done this with thousands and thousands of people. And well, there's two major groups. One is they'll say, I can't relax. I've never relaxed. I've tried all sorts of this things, and I'm sure I won't be able to relax. And then I do the induction and all that, and I look over and they're like, through the whole technique. And then afterwards I say, so did you feel relaxed? And then the second was, you know, this isn't really real. I'm sure I won't have everything. And then afterwards they're monopolizing the group because they're wanting to share every little detail about how their child was sitting on their lap and stroking their hair and holding their hand and talking to them and tell them how wonderful it is where they're living. So no, you don't have to believe. In fact, we encourage skepticism, you know, but we say open-minded skepticism is the best way to be.
Right, right. Now, I want to rewind just a bit because you've sort of laid little hints that there is technology that currently exists to contact our post-material loved ones. I would love if you'd talk a little bit about that as much as you're allowed to talk about it.
Yeah, we share quite a bit about this at soulproof.com. Right now, we have what are called many different proof of concept studies. Dr. Schwartz has been working on this for 15 years now at the University of Arizona's Laboratory for Advances in Consciousness and Health. And so he has done different experiments measuring at a very highly statistically significant level the ability for postmaterial persons to make their presence known and to signal a yes, no answer, because that's what this is about in the beginning. Binary indicators, yes, no, which by the way is how computers work, you know. So you can get a lot out of it actually. So he's done that with their light, their electromagnetic field, their ability to vocalize, their visual image, their density, as measured by their ability to slow down a photon beam or a laser beam they put their hand in, and so on. And I don't want to get too technical here. So we have the proof of concept. However, none of this is considered a commercializable device, which means it needs to be small enough, ideally, that an app can be designed for it so that people can use this technology with their smart devices. It needs to be very safe. That is, no chance of identity theft or, you know, losing security, anything like that. It needs to be very highly accurate, 99.9% accurate, reliable. And so that's what we're working toward now with what we call the soul switch, which again provides yes, no. This is all on the site. So we have done what are called personal identification tests with a team of 18 members. So these are, quote, deceased luminaries, most of them scientists, inventors, educators, and others. And so we have, for example, 4 18 members involved in this experiment. And then we have 10 different details, facts about each one of them. So for example, if we're dealing with Nikola Tesla, I think his mom's name was Duka, D-U-K-A. And so we would say, and say that the person supposedly doing the experiment is Tesla. Say, okay, was your mother's name Duka? The answer should be yes. We say, was your mother's name Mary? The answer should be no. So when we go through 20 questions, you know, the old sign, what is this, 20 questions? Well, yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. 10 for which the answer should be no, 10 for which the answer should be yes. Is this where you're born? Is this when the city you were born in? Is this the date you died? Which, that's one of those that makes like, oh, okay, this is real. I mean, how many people can you ask when did they die? But when you see 100% accurate answers to these questions, session after session, I mean, 24 days, 8 hours a day, that's very, very convincing. Now, what we need, though, is, and what we don't have yet, is the what we call the breakthrough switch, which means 99.9% accurate answers in less than 10 seconds, which is approaching real time. Once we have that, our electrical engineers tell us that it's quite easy, actually, to assemble a keyboard from 40 or so of these switches, so that then they will be able to type, they'll be able to touch the keys, very sensitive keys, and text or type. Well, then that's when we'll have an unprecedented amount, quality and quantity of information from post-material realms. And they will be able then to provide information that they tell us through mediums in our rudimentary communication. We have 30 main ones that we work with, but they say for every one of us, there are hundreds more waiting in line. People from every area of expertise who are geniuses while on Earth, who have continued their studies in the afterlife, who have been enjoying an unobstructed view of life. So they see more of that 99.9% than most of us don't. And they want to help us, and they want to help us heal our world. And once we have the keyboard, then they'll be able to give us that information, so that next we have soul phone, hearing, actually we're calling soul audio, and then soul video, just like we're doing now, video conferencing.
Wow. I wish I could fast forward through time to see when this is has become a reality. But until then, let's talk a bit about your facilitated after-death communication technique. What sort of results have people experienced with that?
As I mentioned, 80% or so the first time around have a meaningful experience. To their surprise, seeing, hearing, feeling, etc., loved ones who have passed. And so, like anything else, practice makes perfect. For the people who don't have a meaningful experience, often this time it's because they weren't fully prepared. You know, they didn't know when they went to the meeting. A lot of these, again, I've done with bereaved parents. And so the next time through, then they can follow the pre-session recommendations and also with practice, increase their chance of having these. So again, people can learn about it. Article number 9 at soulproof.com. The techniques can be available through the Shift Network and people can experience it for themselves.
Right. Well, so you mentioned preparing for the session and a little earlier you mentioned don't drink a lot of coffee, et cetera. So what can a person do to best prepare before a session?
First of all, get on that same wavelength as we discussed, Lisa. And so meditation, for some people, seated meditation, others do better walking in nature, but certainly be calm within. Next, it's important to have a light meal beforehand, but not too much. In other words, it takes about 45 minutes to do this. It's a deep induction process and then the actual experience. So we don't want a person getting low blood sugar because they haven't eaten enough. On the other hand, they're not going to be able to use diaphragmatic breathing, the deep breathing, if they've eaten too much. Just basic things like that. Being comfortable, lying down, as long as a person doesn't think they'll fall asleep, loose fitting clothing, having had a drink of water, make sure they don't have to go to the bathroom, turn off all phones. If there's anyone in the house, say, hey, you know, don't bother me for 45 minutes, setting the stage for an ideal session, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. So I know that some mediums ask their sitters to, like the evening before up until the time of the reading, to don't drink any alcohol or use any recreational drugs, that type of thing. Do you recommend the same thing or is that okay?
Yeah, no, I certainly do recommend they not do that. We say minimal caffeine. I mean, if you want to have a cup of tea or coffee in the morning, okay. But yeah, see that the nervous system is a large part of what mediates this perception. In other words, there's nothing magical about it. The human body and brain are so amazing that it can perceive more of reality than we normally think. And that's why mediums, for example, use different practices to expand their awareness. Well, in the same way, if a person is like smoked dope all day the day before or something like that, yeah, they're going to be half out of it or drank too much. So yeah, I'd say 3 days, no alcohol, no recreational drugs to have an optimal experience.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So then if you're doing one of these sessions, can any post-material person visit? Are they all available to pop in?
These are all great questions, by the way. Thank you for them. And so we've touched upon that some. If a person died recently, or a person's body died recently, so I have to catch myself on the optimal language sometimes, and they haven't had a chance to heal up, charge up, regain being in the flow of life, they may not be able to. But there's also another subset that sometimes loved ones won't come through in after-death communications because the message is that the person on earth needs to learn to stand on their own 2 feet more. They've had a tendency to be codependent on others. And that message comes through loud and clear sometimes. Like, no, you know, you can do this, but the only way you're going to learn you can do this is to do it on your own for a while. And then once a person's gotten that, it paves the way for meaningful experiences.
Mm-hmm. Right. So then what if I'm using this technique and I don't want to contact a specific person who's passed on, if they're pushing through, do I have to connect with them?
Yeah. No, by no means, no. It's a shocking statistic that at least one third of women have been abused sexually, physically, and or mentally. Just what a horrible commentary on how we've done things on Earth and how we need to do things better. And so this question, when I get most often, comes from women, and it's about their grandpa or uncle or father or brother who abused them. They don't want to see them in the afterlife. You know, it's a horrendous thought for them. That'd be like hell to see them again. And so I assure them, no, and that's why I say you can see your loved ones again if you want, but you don't have to. However, there's this caveat. Life is much more grand and really beautifully set up than we can imagine. And sometimes, at least, the people who are worst abusers and the most cruel to us and so on are what we call contrast souls. That is, they're soulmates, really. They purposely took on the role to push us, to push our buttons, and make us have a breakthrough that we perhaps wouldn't have otherwise. This is perhaps most beautifully illustrated by a mother 2 years ago speaking at the Helping Parents Heal conference. And we had 350 people in the room doing this very technique. And a mother came up to me afterwards with tears in her eyes. She said, I did this technique, and my intention was to contact the hit and run driver who killed our daughter. And she said, I just wanted to look in his eyes, and I'm getting emotional talking about it, and say, what kind of person could do this? You know, run over a teenage girl, not stop. If he would have stopped and got help, she might have lived. And he said, so I did the whole experience and I contacted his soul. And she said, I looked into his eyes and all I saw was love. And she said, I realized, oh my God, he's one of my soulmates. And I use this term in the sense of Michael Newton's work that we generally have about 25 or so primary soulmates, a larger number of secondary ones. She said, I realized he was a soulmate who did this. And it was breaking his heart to do this, but he knew that it would serve many people and it would serve all of us involved. So he played the bad guy to be that hit and run driver. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, sometimes I think I know just how amazing life is. And then you hear something like that. Well, just on Saturday, I was doing an IANS, International Association Near Death Studies webinar I was giving. And Chuck Swedrock, who's the director of all that, shared that his brother died by suicide. And Chuck said he was very bitter and angry about this. But when Chuck had his NDE, he saw that that was a setup, that Chuck's soul had a tendency to check out of physical incarnations like this. You know, it's so difficult here. And so to help him stay with it and not choose suicide, his brother chose to come in, pass to encourage Chuck. And Chuck is like, well, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing what my brother did. And so he goes from anger and bitterness to, oh my God, how much love is within and all around all of us, if we could only see.
Oh, such remarkable stories. Thank you. So this leads to my next question. If we're wishing to connect with somebody who is on the other side, so to speak, how can we tell if they need to be left alone for a little while or if they're one of these other circumstances where they've offered to sort of be the sacrificial lamb in that case?
Oh, one nice thing about this technique and another transformational technique is that a person has a sense of things. So you could say, okay, I set an intention to have my grandmother visit, but it doesn't happen for some reason. Then the person having the experience can just ask, okay, is she not available? And the answer just pops in, yes or no. Talk about binary communication. Or is it, am I not to have this communication? And another one of my, I have 11 of different of these transformative products or sessions. And one of them is called Ask Your Soul, where it's very much the same induction process, getting deep within. And then I ask 10 questions that have been most often asked. You know, how can I improve my spiritual path, relationships, my physical health, et cetera. And then there are a couple fill in the blank ones at the end. So a person can actually ask their essence, the part of themselves that existed before they came to earth and continues after the body dies, and get wise answers.
Right. Well, sadly, we are running low on time. I want to make sure that I mention your web address one more time. That is soulproof.com. And I know we could keep talking for hours, but is there anything that we've left out or anything, some sort of a takeaway point for our viewer that you'd like to share?
Two things. First of all, that people understand that this is really real. I mean, you know, we put a lot of trust in the scientific process for good reason. Usually, by the way, unless it's driven by vested interests. But in this case, real scientific research is not. And so it's a whole new time now, an exciting time where you can relax. We can enjoy life. We can trust how life unfolds and enjoy this wonderful experience. I am told, I don't have any validation for it, but I am told that there is a waiting list of souls to come to a place like Earth because it's so full of possibilities for growth and to serve others. But then we get here and we forget the big picture, or we get so numbed out by fear. You know, Pascal said that God is like a comedian playing to an audience that's too afraid to laugh. And it's true, fear just freezes so many people. And so now we're in a different era that way. And the second thing is just like to reiterate all the free resources, the articles, the newsletters, the radio shows at soulproof.com, and the products. I mean, that this product you can buy it on my website, it's a whopping $15. I mean, these are not expensive things. And I do that by design so people all around the world can utilize this. Remember who they are, why they're here, do what they came here to do, enjoy the earth walk, and honor our source.
All right, beautifully stated. Thank you so much for being with us today, Mark. This has been truly a fascinating conversation. Thank you for spending some time with us.
Thank you very much. Take care.
All right, I want to remind everybody, I've been talking with Dr. Mark Pitstick, and I want to thank everyone for joining us. I hope you enjoyed this conversation in the Beyond the Veil Summit.